Superpunk Corporate Meltdown is a sequential podcast. We recommend you listen to it as such to be able to follow the timeline in order as you listen. We have provided detailed notes and music credits in the show notes, and we encourage you to head over there for things like sourcing, transcripts, or other information you may want to access. Thank you.
Superpunk Corporate Meltdown is a podcast that examines workers' rights, institutional betrayal, and corporate retaliation. We trudge through the very public, tumultuous, and exhausting types of battles imposed on workers speaking out about workplace issues by employers.
Up yours, woke moralists.
Things I'm talking to you about how to be inclusive.
This is somebody attempting to subdue what's going on.
Through a case study, we reckon with the reality and impact superpunk corporate meltdowns have on workers and culture. Spoiler alert, it's not good.
What does it say about your press releases that you're deleting them yourself?
Daddy, chill.
People are tired of being abused.
We go deep, trying to understand the points of division co-opted by abrasive leadership and the implications of retaliation for workplaces in any industry. I'm Kate Bailey, a workplace consultant and investigator.
And I'm Fanny Wandell, a hospitality workers advocate.
And this is Superpunk Corporate Meltdown.
We'll see who cancels who.
This is episode 3.2, The Narrative. So far, we've been talking about the media apparatus and how it can tip the scales. Resources and lies are much more effective, it would seem, than truth, facts, and evidence. And speaking of...
In April, Weiser published a statement taking responsibility for one version of the quote. The Sunday Times publishes an exclusive interview with BrewDog CEO in which he provides further context to his accusations over the previous months.
A production note, just to let you know what's been going on and how long it's been going on. But seriously, when it comes to all of the companies mentioned in this broadcast, we have reached out to all parties. For BrewDog and Weiser especially, we also provided a 35-page document detailing the factual claims in our podcast and describing discussion points. We invited them to respond to anything that they wanted to discuss from that document, as well as the questions that we asked. We gave them nearly 7 days and indicated we were open any time to discuss any of this with them. Apart from one journalist whose reply we included in the broadcast, no party has responded to our invitation to reply.
On, I believe, April 6th, Weiser came out with a statement, and they actually claimed one version of the quote in what we now call Quotegate. What did you think about that, Charlotte?
I was in a supermarket in Estonia when I read that. And I was just in absolute and utter disbelief that anybody could ever be that unprofessional was my first thought. Just looking at it, you said something that didn't meet your professional standards and it wasn't meant to be in public. If it doesn't meet your professional standards, why did you say it in the first place? Doesn't meet your professional standards, keep your trap shut. That's how most people operate. And I also looked at it and it felt like it was Weiser taking the blame for something that shouldn't have ever been out in the public. Even if this was something that Weiser said to BrewDog and it was just an offhand comment, it was run with. That was used. It was weaponized. It was used to target people. And the explanation that Weiser gave, it was poor. None of it made any sense. Nobody that I know who operates in any professional capacity would ever see that as an explanation or an apology. And it just felt like something hastily, give them something, shut them up, it's done. But all it did was create more questions.
What, just for fun, I mean, what do you think happened with that quote?
If I was to say a hypothetical situation, I would say that either somebody at Weiser overstepped their professional boundaries spectacularly and did something that they should never have done as a professional and something they should never have done as a human being, and the CEO ran with it, or the CEO just made it up. Hypothetically speaking, of course.
Of course.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Maybe.
Maybe.
Possibly.
We're not sure.
I'm not sure about any CEOs or companies or directors who promise anonymity, but if I was to create one in my mind palace, that would be my explanation.
Fanny, let's analyze QuirkGate and let's see if we can actually land on a conclusion here. You want to kick this off?
I'd be happy to. So we've already discussed the multiple versions that have been circulating and all the replies we've gotten to it. I would really like to take a look at the statement Wiser issued in April when they finally weighed in a more official capacity. Firstly, they take responsibility for one version of this quote. It is not the most defamatory one, like the one we've seen from the Ofcom complaint, which was circulated repeatedly. Here's the version that Wiser takes responsibility for. That being said, this has been the most extreme case we've seen of a small group of former employees on a mission to cause damage to a brand. They go on to say that this was not a part of our independent review, nor a quote from Wiser designed to be used externally, but an opinion formed off the back of observing wider activity around the company. That's already really interesting to me, and I think we could mirror that with the very first version of the quote, which was shared by the CEO hours before the BBC documentary aired. It goes like this. It should be noted, in the review process, Wiser told our teams that this is the most extreme case they have seen of a small group of former employees having such a loud voice when the majority of data from current employees paints a different picture. Obviously, these are some pretty conflicting statements. The CEO's version from January, and I think we've already agreed on this, but it seems likely that this might be the truest version of what had actually happened throughout all of this. I find it very curious because this flew way under the radar for everyone at the time. There was a lot of output from the CEO at the time, and this version didn't contradict the high-level findings published by Wiser to the same degree. Looking back, the fact that it is openly stated by the CEO here that at least one version of this quote was given during the actual review process is worth noting. It's alarming, honestly. I do, however, want to do a thorough breakdown of Wiser's April statement, though, because it is just riddled with inaccuracies and omissions. So I'm just going to get right to it, if you don't mind.
Go off, Fanny.
Yeah, I'll go off. It's not like Wiser hasn't already heard all of this from me already. Let's start with the fact that their statement claims that they have been appointed by BrewDog to conduct an independent review in October of 2021. However, the CEO had announced their decision to go with Wiser in July, so about 4 months prior, within the BrewDog shareholders forum. Also, Punks with Purpose had announced within their Facebook group of open letter signatories that they had made contact with Wiser in September. We've already covered that they've only claimed a version of the quote appearing in the Insider article on March 3rd, 2022, when not only had a representative from Wiser denied this quote having come from their company, it also isn't the version of the quote used in BrewDog's complaint to Ofcom, which is the version that kicked off QuoteGate to begin with. The Insider article piqued everyone's interest because they had amended the source of the quote, citing it as being from the DEO, which the CEO has denied. Next, in Wiser's statement, they said, "In January 2022, we were made aware of the planned contents of the disclosure documentary first broadcast on the 21st of January 2022. We were asked to comment on the contents of the documentary." The BBC disclosure documentary aired on January 24th, and while the CEO that same day claimed that a version of this quote came from the review process, Wiser is saying it was a comment based off of planned contents. Interesting choice of words, if you ask me. Much like how Wiser claims that this comment was based off of wider activity around the company, I'm really starting to wonder what information this quote is based off of. The review? A program they have yet to see with participants they didn't necessarily talk to, or perhaps something completely unrelated to the workplace culture at BrewDog. Another part of this statement is something that I've noticed previously, and it has to do with the way both BrewDog and Wiser present the data from the culture review that took place last year. We know that the open letter from Punks with Purpose had around 300 signatories on it, and for a while it's been insinuated that all signatories had the option of speaking with Wiser. But only 24 people responded to arrange an interview with Wiser, and 15 attended. I believe this is also stated in their high-level findings. What I found out later is that Charlotte Cook herself had, back in September 2021, stated within the former BrewDog staff Facebook group that Wiser only had 40 available interview slots for signatories. So why that piece of information is being left out and why the numbers continue to be presented the way that they are by both companies really makes me raise an eyebrow, personally. I see it as an omission, for sure. Finally, the statement does not address that this is a completely conflicting statement to a response from a Wiser representative just a few weeks prior on March 15th, where they instead directed people to BrewDog's external PR advisor, who they claimed had misquoted a press release. And we heard a bit about this already in a previous episode of this podcast. In my own reply to Wiser, I go on to highlight that despite repeated statements that this was a company-wide survey, the whole company did not participate. And the number of current BrewDog employees has also been really hard to clarify. But we'll stick to the Wiser culture review, where they state that they had reached out to all current staff, approximately 1,800. Now, who they actually managed to survey and interview accounted for about 45%. To me, that is not a significant input when less than half the staff is willing to participate. So why a company-wide survey, not an investigation, is the foundation for BrewDog's argument is a bit lost on me. Circling back to the remark about providing this opinion based off of wider activity around the company, I think it speaks to Wiser's professionalism if they are willing to contradict their own high-level findings published just a month prior, which concluded that former workers wanted to use their negative experiences for good and help create positive change within the company. I also don't understand why Wiser would want to offer an opinion on anything that doesn't directly relate to the job that they were hired to do.
I completely agree. And it creates this ethical question around the credible independent third party that Wiser were purported to be. In these types of situations, the way that that status is protected is that you don't have closed door conversations about external activities to the activity that you are conducting. You're 100% right to raise these inaccuracies and these omissions. And I think the juxtaposition of the original quote, the one from the CEO, which highlights that in the review process, Wiser told our teams, versus this April 6th statement is jarring. I think it does speak to the professionalism of an organization. And I think where we can land, because you want to assume, you know, you don't want to assume is the point, but I think where we could definitely land is that something has gone on and there is some sort of an internal conflict around the ownership of this quote. And my sense is that is because it is such a harmful quote, actually. If it was a totally fine thing for an independent, credible third party to say and to infer and then to spread, and unfortunately, like, that doesn't really lend itself to being independent
anymore,
really.
It also, I mean, in retrospect, it kind of makes their entire report feel incredibly passive aggressive, to be honest with you, because
how can both things be true?
Exactly.
How can both things be true?
Yeah.
That's the question, right? Yeah. And it even just that being the case kind of discredits all the premises that they've tried to stand behind. And the thing I think that I want people to take away here is that this quote was held up by media institutions as well. And they betrayed workers really with a lack of attention to detail around the facts of this. This is a pretty egregious thing to even find, and it really does tip the scales. And from my perspective, this is what resources look like when you have the resources to tip the scales, right? Using an, quote, independent, credible third party and, quote, independent, credible journalism.
Ahead of our next segment, we did actually receive a reply from the journalist who wrote the article that we discuss in the segment. While, for logistical reasons that the journalist cited, they were unable to provide a direct statement, they did ask that we take the context into account as much as possible. Based on this response, you'll hear me interjecting with this context as production notes, which we presented as statements, and we're also going to read a text conversation as well. Thanks for bearing with us. Let's now return to Charlotte Cook and hear a little bit about her experiences with the media in the last 6 to 7 months.
At one point, Charlotte, you had an experience with a journalist, and technically it was Punks with Purpose having an experience with a journalist because all of this was being filtered as a collective response. And you are aware of the communications between the group and the journalist. Initially, everything started off fine, you were approached, but then there were some red flags. Can you elaborate on the interactions the collective had with this journalist?
Yeah, so this journalist approached Punks with Purpose via the Twitter platform for a piece that they were writing for a large UK Sunday supplement in a newspaper. they just asked us some questions in general. There was nothing particularly accusatory or anything, no response to any questions that had been made. Then a few days later, we got an email that came through asking for some clarification about Punks with Purpose co-founder Charlotte Cook.
Production note, context. On March 29, 2022, via email, Punks with Purpose clarified to the journalist that Charlotte Cook was not a founding member of Punks with Purpose, stating, Charlotte Cook is not a Punks with Purpose founder. She joined on June 10, 2021. The group was founded on July 14, 2020. The CEO has been told this repeatedly, and his continued repeating of this untruth is extremely indicative of him presenting a narrative that does not exist. We have attached proof of this that is redacted to protect others' privacy. But there are screenshots of her joining the group on the 10th of June 2021 and of the group's founding in 2020. Obviously, we ask that these screenshots are not shared with the CEO or BrewDog, simply to provide evidence that Charlotte Cook is not a Punks with Purpose founder. But Charlotte Cook is, in no uncertain terms, not a founder of Punks with Purpose, nor is she a spokesperson for the group. Statements from Punks with Purpose are published and edited as a collective. The journalist has stated, he did not call Charlotte Cook a founding member of Punks with Purpose in the article, and that it was a sub-editor who used this description in a caption. The journalist stated that this was changed online after Charlotte got in touch.
And again, just to clarify, I am not a founder of Punks with Purpose, no matter what you may have heard. So that was my first indication that I'm, all right, this is how this is going to go. Strap in, boys. It's going to be a wild ride. So answered the questions, made it clear that I was not a founder of Punks with Purpose. And then another email came through.
Production note. Context. On March 29, 2022, Punks with Purpose responded to the journalist regarding an individual implicated by the CEO as being a member of Punks with Purpose and facing criminal proceedings. The Punks with Purpose response states, the individual was not a founder of Punks with Purpose. The individual left the group after 5 days, referencing the exact dates around this. Punks with Purpose has since had no contact with the individual and state, Punks with Purpose utterly refutes in the strongest terms any connection to or knowledge of the alleged conduct, and Punks with Purpose also offer to answer further questions. The journalist did not request to view the evidence to support Punks with Purpose claims. The journalist was provided this evidence after the article was published, unsolicited, from Punks with Purpose members. Hand and Heart have seen this evidence, and we can verify its veracity.
And I was actually ill in Spain with norovirus, so feeling not particularly cheerful or particularly interested in being nice to anybody. And we got an email through that asked a question stating that the journalist had seen an email that was sent by a former member of Punks with Purpose to the CEO, allegedly extorting them, asking for blackmail. I have never seen any copy of this document. I don't even know if this document exists. I've got no proof that it was real. I've got no proof it was sent. I've got no proof of who sent it. So I was asked to comment on it, despite the fact that never seen the document, don't even know if it's real, and had nothing to do with the conversation between that individual and the CEO whatsoever. So the only thing that I could do to respond is to say, these things are not connected. This is a false narrative. This has nothing to do with Punks with Purpose. This has nothing to do with our mission. This has nothing to do with anything that anybody else is doing out there in the world to try and put this situation right. Am I just supposed to take their word for it? I don't think that's how journalism works.
Did you respond strongly to this journalist in terms of making it clear where Punks with Purpose stood in regards to this allegation?
Nobody at Punks with Purpose had any prior knowledge of any communication between this individual and the CEO, had no knowledge of any accusations of blackmail. It was the first thing that we heard, and the first thing that we heard was an email from a journalist who's seen, allegedly, the proof. We've never seen it, we've never been involved with it, and we would utterly condemn it as well if it was true. And yeah, I was just very taken aback that I was being asked to comment on something that didn't involve me and that I couldn't see any evidence of being true.
When the article was finally published, did you feel that the rebuttal that you had provided to this allegation was represented in the reporting?
All that it said was a representative from Punks with Purpose claims to have no knowledge of this interaction, which I guess, you know, that's a handy short way of presenting it. But again, I was never presented with any proof that this happened, and yet I was asked to comment on it. I don't think that that's a particularly strong standpoint to take, to say that this has happened, that one person's seen it. Has it been forensically tested?
Yeah.
Has anybody got any proof that this was actually sent by the person it's alleged to have been sent by? I think that it sounds like a slightly shaky ground to stand on.
Yeah. And I think it was at a time when so many former workers were being persecuted as being part of this criminal conspiracy, that if there was this clear allegation of criminal activity, and then there was also evidence provided by Punks with Purpose that very, very clearly shows what this individual's involvement in the organization was, which was a matter of days in the summer of last year. It just feels as though that criminal element could have been addressed, because it was a core part of the accusations that the CEO had come to the article with.
It most certainly could have been addressed. And it was basically within the same breath that accusations of criminality were made, and accusations of court case. Again, I have not been contacted by police or lawyers in relation to this or any other matters. And it just felt like two disconnected things were being put together to convey a false narrative. And I thought that that was unacceptable.
And Fanny, you also took issue with this article when it was eventually reported. Can you describe the interaction that you had?
For sure.
Production. So,
I was also someone who had been interviewed by this journalist. The questions I got were not very specific. Instead, they seemed to cover the general themes, such as, do you think there's a vendetta against the CEO? This was not the first time I had spoken with a journalist who I felt didn't have a real grasp of the complexities of the situation and just the sheer volume of information that we're dealing with here. On top of that, they made it clear that this was a profile about the CEO and BrewDog, and therefore was interested in talking to people who could add contrast to the piece. So as the article was being written, I would occasionally update them with any other media published. They would say thank you and assure me that the story was coming along nicely. I said no problem, you get it. At one point, I was told that my quotes would not appear in the article because apparently my responses echoed the answers from Punks with Purpose and the writer was running out of space, which is so fair. I in no way needed to lend my voice to the article, but I was happy to share information or perhaps even connect the journalist with sources had they asked. Fast forward to the publishing date, and I was really taken aback.
When we discussed this element of our broadcast with the journalists, they asked that we provide as much context as possible. In order for Fanny to discuss this interaction, it seems as though the best context possible would be to read the text conversation in its entirety from that day. Here we go. We start on Sunday, April 10, when Fanny writes to the journalist and says, "Saw the article. What happened?" The journalist replies, "Hi, Fanny. We addressed every major allegation. Some are stronger than others in my view. My article reflected my best sense of the story." Fanny replies, "I've been having a hard time seeing what the purpose of your piece was, other than handing a microphone over to someone who already has been shouting inaccuracies to the masses for months. The contrast you said you were seeking certainly isn't clear, and some of the wording is problematic at best. Why? Person A's employer is named. I'll never understand. Doing so very much leaves him open to harassment and could compromise him in many ways. From my own experiences with the media, this is a pretty standard courtesy. On top of that, there is so much you could have checked with me and I would have been able to have provided receipts or potentially sources, as I think my updates to you made very clear. It's obviously too late now, but I find it pretty absurd to admit much of what has happened since you first took the story 4 weeks ago, especially since the Times just covered a story about BrewDog's issues with the consultancy Hand and Heart last Monday." Those two replies were sent on April 11. On Tuesday, April 12, the journalist responds to Fanny. "I'm afraid all of you, person A included, and indeed the CEO of BrewDog, don't seem to entirely understand how journalism works. I'm sorry you guys didn't like the piece. It was an interview with the CEO, so yes, we gave him a microphone, with plenty of criticism and response quotes too.
The idea is not to cover the minutiae of what is happening right now, but to take a big picture look at the story and hear the CEO's response to the barrage of criticism for the first time. Until someone actually points out an error I've made or something I've got wrong, I'm content with it. On Wednesday, April 13, Fanny replies, "Hi, thank you for that condescending reply. I'm not sure what my point about person A's safety has to do with my understanding of your journalistic efforts." Emphasis in the text on your. "I could go point by point over all the unnecessary and inaccurate details in your article, but given your pathetic defense, I think it's better that it stands on its own. As more details from this ongoing saga emerge, I'm as content as you for your work to speak for itself. All the best." The journalist replies, "Calling people absurd and pathetic is neither professional nor adds luster to your cause." Fanny replies, "I called your choice to omit things absurd and your defense pathetic. And as you pointed out yourself, I am not a journalist. You reached out to me as a source and I was happy to help. I'm far more concerned with the well-being of those advocating for change than your bruised ego. Best we end the communication here. I don't see much point to us discussing your approach to this story any further." The journalist replies, "Sure."
For starters, this article seems to insinuate that Punks with Purpose is somehow associated with legal proceedings relating to this alleged conspiracy theory of the CEOs, when a paragraph above has the CEO admitting that he actually paid someone to initiate contact with those he considered to be his critics, and now claims he had been defrauded of that money, which I found really odd because it seemed to aim at creating some type of incriminating gotcha moment when, again, right above it, the CEO had clearly expressed that it was he who wanted this individual that he had paid to interact with others. The article is all over the place, to be honest, and often regurgitated a lot of the same stuff that everyone has read about the company: driving tanks through London, taxidermy cats getting tossed out of helicopters, and so on. But there was something else that seriously bothered me in the article, and that's the fact that it named someone's workplace. So this was the first time I sort of interfered with a journalist and asked what happened, and further proceeded to point out my concern with the article. To me, that was totally unacceptable and a gross violation of this person's privacy. This person had been public within this debate for a while, but between the days leading up to the BBC documentary and the publishing of this article, the CEO had tried to reveal said person's workplace already within the shareholders forum and had sent private investigators to go talk to their former coworker, according to the reporting done by The Guardian. I know that all of us participating in activism and advocacy have tried extremely hard to sort of compartmentalize all of this from our workplaces for many reasons, not least because we all have the right to retain employment. This journalist compromised that and left this person vulnerable to harassment again. The journalist wrote back stating that me, the individual whose workplace was revealed, and the CEO didn't understand how journalism works. To that I say, sure, I don't understand how this journalist's form of journalism works, because Charlotte's workplace wasn't named, so why single out the other person in this way? And as far as I know, this person wasn't even given a right of reply. Finally, I've asked several journalists to not include my workplace in the past, and by then had observed it to be a pretty common courtesy.
And I think a lot of the issue that comes with this is that actually journalists don't fully know the situation and they don't know the questions to ask to get the full explanation of what's been going on for well over a year and a half at this point, Nelly. And people are very happy to let them know, but they just go in there with snippets. And this is such a difficult, complex situation that to only go in with snippets means that you're never going to get to the bottom of what's actually happening. You're not doing justice to people on either side. And, you know, you can't just write an article when you don't know who all the key players are, what's going on, the web of complexity that's going on behind the scenes, and then present it for public consumption. I don't think that's right.
Recently, the CEO of the company went on a popular podcast to be vulnerable, allegedly, and discuss the alleged truth about their management style, which was raised in the article, and their mistakes, which allegedly did not happen because it's actually a criminal conspiracy and personal vendetta against him. But anyway, he went on a podcast, very popular one, to talk about this. Charlotte, you have since engaged with the publisher of this podcast that we are discussing regarding a right to reply. Can you break this down for us?
Absolutely. So I was mentioned, not by name on the podcast, but in reference to a story that I told on the BBC podcast. I asked for a right of reply, which is my legal right, and I wanted to put the story straight because in this podcast, the CEO discusses both Punks with Purpose and the court cases that are currently going through, and again, fails to clarify that neither Punks with Purpose nor any former worker that we know of is involved in any of these cases. And I thought that this was a bit of a lapse in judgment of the producer of the podcast, because this is a perfect opportunity for everyone to get their story straight, for everyone to know that what happened in America is different to what happened in the UK, what happened with people in private life is different to what happened in the workspace. And I asked for a right to reply. I emailed the publisher, the producer, the PR, and the presenter. And apart from a very brief acknowledgement of the receipt of my request, I've heard nothing. And to me, this just feels like children playing at journalism. You don't get to have somebody on to make accusations, to have the reputation that the CEO has of making sweeping statements, and then not offer anybody else the opportunity to put their side of the story forward. It's a basic tenet of responsible journalism that you give somebody the right to reply. And this podcast hasn't done it. This podcast is big. Lots of people listen to it. And a lot of people who don't have any understanding of the complexities, again, of the situation will hear it and only hear one side. And I think that's fundamentally deeply unfair. And I don't think that people who can't respect the basic principles of responsible journalism should be putting media out there.
I think this, again, just drives home the fact that the media can be used as an apparatus for an individual or a company in turmoil to kind of launch these rehabilitative campaigns where, as you know, we hear one side of the story. And particularly what's notable about this is that all of this is still ongoing. You have the CEO, whenever our side asks for clarity, saying, well, we can't clarify anything about ongoing court cases. Okay. But then that same individual representing that same company will go onto a massive broadcast and mass communicate a very carefully crafted, I guess, collage of the truth. And these media institutions, essentially, if they're not doing the journalism, they are a megaphone, right? If you don't do the journalism to say, well, is it true? Or what is the truth of that? Should we discuss that? Should someone else be contacted to verify that? If you don't do that, you're just a microphone for misinformation. It's reprehensible.
Absolutely. I also think it's really notable that the interviewer himself states that he had listened to the entire BBC podcast, and yet what was cherry-picked to be addressed in their interview was still historical issues, when so much of the last few months have been about what's going on now. How are people being retaliated against now in present day since coming out with these allegations? I feel that it's a massive oversight to not address all that's come out since the airing of the documentary in January.
I completely agree. It's just giving an abrasive leader an opportunity to drive home their agenda and to continue to embrace that power dynamic of having access to media who's willing to not check their allegations and just let it happen and not have their finger on the pulse enough to be able to say, actually, the historical stuff is bad, but what is happening today is maybe even worse. Because it's part cover-up, part shakedown, and part bulldoze until our agenda is the only thing that exists.
Absolutely. And the fact that one of the explanations for why this whole situation has occurred was because people in the UK are jealous. I can't believe anyone even published that. Apparently in America, they celebrate success, but in the UK, we just want to batter everybody down. Why didn't the presenter ask the CEO why in the BBC documentary, so many of the allegations and more modern allegations than some of the historical UK allegations came from America? Are those people not supposed to be the ones cheering for him? It was just, again, a megaphone. And when the people who reasonably ask for their right to reply are ignored, that's not media, that's a megaphone.
What are your intentions around your right to reply in regards to this podcast?
To say what actually happened, to say that nobody is involved in the criminal cases or the civil cases, to say that I don't feel that I've been apologized to say that Punks with Purpose aren't jealous. You know, I do not have any modicum of jealousy towards the CEO. That is not a life that I would like to have. And I'm very happy with my life that I've worked hard towards and achieved a lot in. Is he really diminishing my achievements so much to say that I'm simply jealous? I don't think that's a particularly mature response or thought process. And to just make sure that other people can put their side forward, we always want to represent both sides and give people the opportunity to, but that has to work both ways. We don't have the platform. We don't have the media access. We don't have the advisors. We don't have the people who can create an image for us that then we just have to spout off the sound bites. We just want to be able to say the truth.
Yeah. And speaking of, one other little nugget that I think is a little bit of a microcosm of everything that you've just alluded to and discussed there, Charlotte. And that is, you know, you talk about this like spouting off sort of stuff. But one thing that came up in this podcast that I think might be worthwhile mentioning, and I can do it because I'm an autistic person. But in addition to the CEO having blamed their bad management style on three things so far, being on a fishing boat, having a bad relationship with their mother, and also experiencing acne as a teen, he then went on this podcast to state that it could be something to do with light autism.
I don't think that you can use a disability to explain bad behavior. It's insulting to people with disabilities and it diminishes what people have done to other people. Again, it's just a, I'm sorry, but. Oh, sorry you feel that way, but. It's a big old but. And the response whenever anyone has actually criticized this in the media is to send threatening letters and have the articles taken down. And that doesn't help to open up the conversation around disability and difficulty. That just proves, again, that the narrative wants to be controlled by one side and one side only, and that's unacceptable.
Yeah, that was really notable that those articles, which came from individuals who had heard this comment on the podcast, and some of them were autistic and some of them had connections with autistic people, and they went on to write about their feelings around this. Because what I think, as an autistic person, the one thing I'll say is that these workers that came forward to speak up about this person did not experience his autism. They didn't experience that. They experienced perhaps potentially someone with yet to be diagnosed autism behaving badly. There's a very clear distinction there. So it was very notable that these articles were taken down, written by people who are on the spectrum or who have close connections with people on the spectrum, because the CEO wanted to be able to use that as a get-out-of-jail-free card. How disgusting.
Absolutely. And I think it's also odd because it's not a fact that's been established yet. It's still something the CEO is waiting to hear back about. And so on that note, I'm not optimistic about it, but I would hope that we then get updated because I don't think it's fair to throw that out before it's something that's even confirmed, let alone at all.
There's also a lot of people on the spectrum who don't have access to the resources to be diagnosed. And it's quite insulting to sort of immediately go out and be like, oh, well, like I'm working on this way to get out of this situation that I'm in, when for other people, it's a very difficult and real experience.
I agree. And I also found it really very jarring that the CEO asked for these articles to be taken down, saying that they misrepresented what he'd actually said about autism. If the response and the scrutiny that you receive after you talk about something isn't what you want, maybe you just don't talk about it in the first place. Maybe you just should have kept shtum about the autism if you didn't want people to then comment on it, because it's such a ridiculous thing to say, such a preposterous way to try and explain your behavior, and so insulting to millions of people that maybe you should just reflect a little bit and stay quiet.
I'd also love to recommend to the CEO that they brush up a little bit about the appropriate language to use when discussing these sort of things, because it was only demonstrative that even though this might be something he will now need to figure out for himself, he is still ignorant to the subject.
Now, we do not want to take this down a petty route. The media in these circumstances, in these landscapes, these dialogues, whatever you want to call it, is something that takes everyone involved. It takes time, effort, and energy. And everyone engages with it because it is helpful to the cause or the agenda. Or you have a responsibility to reply to something that's being put out from the other side, right? But you know what? We've fucking seen some shit over the last year. Fanny, would you like to kick off our laundry list of media institution fails?
Where to start, honestly? Being condescended to with journalists trying to explain to me how they cover legal liability, which I'm very much aware of. And that was kind of part of coercing me into talking to them, and I just didn't need the speech. Then alerting journalists to certain issues that they ignored, and which now I've seen come back up, and just sitting here knowing that they've known about it for 6-7 months via me.
Yeah, that's interesting, because there have been some pretty serious consequences around stuff that just hasn't been investigated properly. And we've seen journalists be informed directly by sources in stories and then just not do anything and then scramble to catch up to the story later. It's like, okay. And I just want to note that we're talking very generally about our experiences here. So this is stuff that could have happened in July of last year or in January of this year. And we don't want to go down that route of naming people. We're just trying to reiterate how difficult it can be in these circumstances, because you're kind of subjected to this thing, which is helpful, but on their terms only, right?
Yeah, completely. Then you have the ones who need you to fill in the gaps for them, which believe me, I'm more than happy to do. But then it would be really nice if you could just engage with me if I'm doing that kind of labor for you, because I totally understand having to be objective and everything like that, but that's on the journalist, not for me. I've had people ask me, who's Rat Magnet?
Yep.
Which is pretty shocking.
Yeah, I think that was the same journalist that asked me when it was really obvious who it was, but they said, who's Wiser?
Oh my gosh.
I was like, how are you? You know, and it had come after this like grand speech about, you know, following the story and being so engaged and, you know, wanting to do this, that, the other, whatever. Like, and you're just like, oh my God.
Then there's, you know, getting engaged by media that you know are already talking to, I don't want to say the other side, but getting engaged by media that you know they're already working on the story, they already have their angle, and they want you now to participate and play a part in that angle. So I've definitely experienced being kind of like coerced, or like I was forced into certain interviews. Getting called a sexism activist certainly wasn't a choice of mine. That especially was quite painful. That was where I think I was strung along for 3-4 days before a quote of mine was actually used. And it was about 4 articles that were awful. And then the 5th one came, and I don't know anything for sure, but it was like, it was still the same journalist. And then it was a completely different tone, and everything that had been built up in the 4 articles leading up to that had just gotten smashed down. It was so interesting.
Yeah, I remember that. That was completely bizarre. That was also the same publication where a journalist reached out to me for comment for a piece that they were adamant was coming out late in the week, but then it was published that same day, which resulted in another journalist calling me and accusing me of trying to get PR for my business, which, given I'd worked hours for them, encouraging sources to cooperate because it felt, you know, like the safest thing at the time. And I felt like they always knew that I was just wanting to help those individuals. It was just so offensive to me on both sides. Both journalists breaking the trust and crossing the line and sort of revealing their agenda, and that they don't really care. They just want the comment, and then they're going to do what they want, which is so wrong. And here's another point. I feel like many of the journalists taking an interest or being assigned these stories over the last year have had a complete lack of awareness of A, how transparent their agenda is, and B, what you are asking people who, for many of them, are essentially whistleblowers, right? In a different circumstance, they could be classed as whistleblowers. And these people are putting themselves and their lives out there. I think it reflects really poorly on journalists
when they seek the most salacious, most gut-wrenching of the stories, but then also refuse to go deeper and understand that these stories people are telling are, yes, important and crucial on an individual level, but that people are telling them to highlight workplace issues. And it's not enough that these journalists will state, well, I'm an investigative reporter, you can feel safe with me. If they go on and ask stupid questions that leave sources, you know, wondering if you haven't read this article literally from yesterday, because you're asking questions that were addressed in that article, and you just assume that this source is going to go on record named, that's a bad situation. And then these journalists get pissed when the sources will ask for legal coverage, which, by the way, they're not really asking for much because journalism can only cover what is on the record. I mean, there are so many other legal liabilities to consider there. And the other thing is they then get resentful when the source gets scared or intimidated because they're not able to provide that legal coverage, or they're not willing to do the backdoor encrypted channel meetup or things like that. The source gets scared and intimidated, and then the journo gets resentful. And in that resentment, they'll be like, oh, it's fun, it's fun, it's fun. But they kind of get really passive aggressive and resentful. This has happened on countless occasions. And then they apply pressure on the source to go on record. And on top of that, these journalists rarely consider that there are more than one of them in someone's DMs. And this situation is creating pressure for sources on top of a situation that is already completely pressure-filled. I think, honestly, the last year has shown me that, with a few notable exceptions, that there has been a genuine lack of care for these sources and the types of stories that they're coming forward with. And it's not a game. It's not clickbait. It's stuff that you have to really commit to and investigate and be able to verify, not just that one salacious story. Because this isn't gossip. You can't half-ass these stories. You need to understand the pressures on the sources in coming forward. And then try not to act butthurt when that impacts you. Oh, your career's being threatened. No, it's not. These people's lives, their security, their personal sense of privacy is being threatened. Your career's going to be fine, babe.
Completely. I mean, as you said, it's a lack of care. It's also a lack of urgency with a story like this and with a company like this, with the means and clearly with the PR training. So things could change from day to day. The stories could evolve immediately. And then, especially in this case where sources have been so heavily under fire and targeted in such visceral ways, it shouldn't shock anyone that being asked to sit tight is not really a tempting option.
Great point. And of course, there are some stories that are going to naturally require that people sit tight while things are verified and things are investigated. But over the last year, there's been many, many stories. In fact, the majority of stories which are actually reflective of what the source is living and experiencing at that time and can be verified pretty quickly through primary sourcing. But no, if that doesn't fit the journalist's timeline or their cat and mouse game, then forget about it. Forget that companies coming after sources will literally keep doing it if they are not exposed publicly, because they can. And also there's just, yeah, a total disregard for the fact that these stories rely on momentum to keep the public up to date. And let's be real, to keep the public interested and to keep them factually abreast of what's happening so that they can follow the story. And this is where the media really loses, because sources then just feel denigrated and like their stories mean nothing and like what is happening to them means nothing. And this just draws me into the topic that social media is such an important tool to be able to keep the pressure on the situation, to be able to keep demanding answers of badly behaved companies. But as we've seen over the last year, fact-checking the fucking media. As the expert in social media community work, Fanny, could you talk a little bit about social media in this context?
I think when used properly, it is crucial. And I think it's such an untapped resource because people use the internet so irresponsibly. But when used well, I don't see why a social media account can't be respected. They are. Every person that's listening to this probably follows some sort of social media account that provides them information that they trust and that they too believe is legitimate. So while mine provides information, it also does have that element of free speech and community response. And I don't always tone police because there's the shareholders forum for that. I think it's completely fair when I then see an article that's littered with inaccuracies, wrong dates, wrong information. And if I'm able to provide it and better yet with a source, then I don't see why not. So that isn't at all to say that these things shouldn't be investigated by the media, because of course there's reliable media out there. It's more to draw attention to these issues so that they can be further pushed and investigated.
We're going to conclude this episode of Superpunk Corporate Meltdown, but we felt it was really important to have a conversation about the role that media plays in these situations. The practice of journalism and the commitment to integrity and facts and bringing it to the public is very important, but it also plays a role in a superpunk corporate meltdown. You love this music. That means that you love Amunda, A-M-U-N-D-A. Find out more in our show notes, where you'll also find all the other credits. Thank you.